When Eddie Williams moved to Washington, D.C., few people knew of the Joint Center for Political and Economic Studies or even felt the need for a think tank devoted primarily to issues affecting African Americans. At the time, there were just a few hundred African American politicians. 32 years later, there are about 10,000 black elected officials around the country, and the Joint Center's work is used by political candidates, policymakers, and pundits. Tomorrow, Eddie Williams retires. Today, he joins us here in Studio 3A. Welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Thank you, Neil.
If you have questions for Eddie Williams about the progress or lack of same, if you think that, in black politics in the United States over the past three decades, our phone number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, and the email address is totn@npr.org. And Eddie Williams, when you started the organization, it was called the Joint Center for Political Studies. It was only about 2 years old. What was your understanding of the need for a think tank devoted to issues concerning African Americans?
Well, Neil, giving credit where credit is due, I really did not start it. I came in a year and a half after it had been founded.
Mm-hmm.
And the first executive director of the Joint Center was a very distinguished African American lawyer whose name was Frank Reeves, for whom the D.C. Municipal Center is named. The people who were involved in the founding of the Joint Center include Dr. Kenneth B. Clark, the noted social psychiatrist, a man who's now deceased, Louis Martin, several elected officials, Dick Hatcher, who had recently been elected mayor in Gary, Indiana, and some in California in the state legislature. So they all got together after the riots of 1968 with the assassination of Dr. King. And they concluded that, you know, we can't make a living or policy out of riots, so we've got to do something more constructive. And they concluded that some things had been put on the books, some laws had been passed, and now had become the time to implement those laws and those executive orders. And the best way to implement policy in a democracy, of course, is through the political process. So they concluded that more and more African Americans would run for office, more and more would get voting. Would register to vote under the terms of the Voting Rights Act of 1965. And to the extent this was all true, there needed to be some organization that would keep track of it and help to fuel this kind of movement. That, up until that time, had not been the work of the Urban League or the NAACP or any other organization. So they went to the Ford Foundation and got a grant to create, as you said, what was then the Joint Center for Political Studies. And people have often asked, well, what is a joint center? How are you joined? An interesting story goes with that, because here in Washington, there is a joint center that deals with bones and hip replacements. We're sometimes confused with them.
So arthritis aside.
But we were called Joint Center because we came into being with two sponsors. One was Howard University, and the other was the Metropolitan Applied Research Center, then in New York, headed by Dr. Kenneth Clark. It no longer exists today. Mm-hmm. And so hence the name Joint Center. It helped distinguish us from a number of centers for politics, or centers for political studies around the country.
As you settled into your job, though, into your position, what were the questions you started to ask? What were the issues you really started to see as you looked at this systematically?
Well, the number one challenge, the number one raison d'etre, a reason for our being founded, was to provide nonpartisan training and technical assistance for newly elected black officials. Because they were coming into office at a pretty rapid pace. They had not been in office before. Many of them had never worked in the governance arena, in mm-hmm. the area of public policy. So we placed a lot of emphasis on training, technical assistance, writing proposals, resource allocation, resource identification, meet your reps at HUD.
All the glamour issues is what you took over.
All of the bread and butter issues of office. We also taught courses in ethics, too, which is another important issue for one in office. And so what were the issues back then? The issues were many of the same issues today. The substantive issues were employment, education, housing. For many of these officials, they were concerned about building roads, providing infrastructure for their communities. And they needed information, too.
Mm-hmm.
And we hooked them up to a lot of networks. We often got universities in their communities to assist them. So they began to build up an infrastructure that could be of assistance to them.
And you began to build up an infrastructure of African Americans at various levels, from anywhere from university to graduate students to then interns, and then staffing all of these various institutions, especially government, to learn the ropes.
That's right. We wanted them to learn the ropes of governance. And we brought a number of people in to help them. We got them exposed. We got funds from Housing and Urban Development, Department of Commerce. And early on, I guess it was the Nixon administration, had a program called the Small Towns Program. And we got connected to that and provided a lot of assistance to the elected officials. Another thing we did that was important and has turned out to be unique, we kept from the very beginning a roster or a list of all black elected officials in the United States. And today we're the only organization that does that. Even the Census Bureau calls upon us to get that kind of data.
And how long was that list when you took office?
I took office in 72, and that list really was just maybe a few thousand.
Yeah, and you're talking about at every level of government.
Every level of government.
Alderman all the way up to...
That's correct.
And now I assume that list is computerized, and it would take you a pretty long time to scan it.
It would take a while to scan it. Now it's close to 10,000, as you indicated earlier. And it continues to grow, not at the same pace. For example, just one example, nationally, we will have a net gain of 2 African Americans on the Hill this year. Barack Obama is one that we know about, but there's also an increase in the House as well.
Let's get some listeners involved in the conversation. Our guest is Eddie Williams, the president of the Joint Center for Political and Economic Studies, for another day. 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Our email address is totn@npr.org. Let's talk with George, who's on the line in Glendale, Arizona.
Yes, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
I'm very happy you have this issue. I'm happy you took my call. I was a runaway and at age 13, and I marched with a CORE against the Chicago Public Schools in Chicago when I was there, and I became totally self-supporting at 13 years old. And I am now a physician, and I do not see where we have really advanced politically any further than those days. Yes, our accomplishments academically have improved, but they were enamored with poison pills back in those days, where they would take out the economic gain and leave us with nothing but the shell of things, and that we would only get the image of what we wanted, and that's really what we have today. We don't see really the economic autonomy that Dr. King wanted us to gain control of our lives. We are still being controlled by those who were the same economically privileged people of the past. We don't have that autonomy anymore. The paradigm has changed from whites only to whites preferred. And it's really sad, because now for example, recently here in Arizona, I asked for assistance from the president of NAACP on a matter, and when he realized that this was a matter that was not specifically related to blacks or Hispanics, he simply returned the matter to me. He turned his back and walked away. I mean, this is a sad situation for minorities, and that we cannot see, if we cannot see a future in civil rights in a context other than blacks and Hispanics. We have to look at civil rights and as rights for all America, as Dr. King envisioned.
Well, let's get a response from Eddie Williams. How do you measure things?
Well, first, I'd like to thank the caller for the question, and to commend him for his contributions to civil rights when he was involved with CORE in Chicago. That was an important contribution, and he made his way from the civil rights battles to the medical school, and that's very good. I think today it is fair to say that there have been significant economic, political, and social progress on behalf of African Americans. It is also fair to say that the dream of Dr. King and the dream of this nation has not been fulfilled, and we are still trying to fulfill all of the rights that have been promised by the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence. To that extent, I think that I have some sympathy for the caller. But it means that we must stay the course. We cannot give up. Our name is Joint Center for Political and Economic Studies, and we do a lot of economic analyses. And we find that there has been growth. There's been growth in entrepreneurship in this country. There certainly has been growth individuals getting advanced degrees. What we're reading now about the decline in African-American enrollment in places like the University of Michigan and University of Illinois, and people aren't quite sure why, after the big fight over affirmative action, that would be the case. I suspect that some of the students are perhaps going to smaller colleges and maybe even community colleges. But the push is still on to increase, to advance in education, educational opportunities, to advance in economic opportunity. And I just can't imagine what would have happened with a responsible official in Arizona not giving you a constructive answer to a broader economic question, because most of the civil rights organizations are concerned with economic advancement.
We're talking with Eddie Williams as he prepares to retire after 32 years as the president of the Joint Center for Political and Economic Studies. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's get another caller on the line. This is Tim in Warren, Ohio.
Hello. Yes, my question is, how would the average person obtain the knowledge and data that a think tank obtains and gathers? And is there a fee? And how would I access that knowledge?
Well, the first point I would tell you is that our website, where a tremendous amount of information is located, is www.jointcenter.org, O-R-G.
Okay, wonderful.
And the telephone number is 202-789-3500.
Okay, fine.
And I'm sure you will get a response to your question.
Is there a fee for that knowledge usually, or is it available to the average person? Or
it's available to the average person as we speak, and I say that because we are looking forward to devising some ways so that there is a subscription base for some of the highly specialized information that we have. A lot of people will call, and they don't want to just see census data or statistics. They want to solve a certain problem, and they will say, well, can you analyze this data and give me a narrative report?
Okay.
Well, for something like that, obviously we would have to charge.
Okay, very good. Hey, thank you very much. Great show. Appreciate it.
Tim, thanks for the call.
Bye.
Let's talk now with Julie. Julie's calling from Washington, D.C.
Hi, I'm a lawyer, and I am an African-American female. I want to commend you for your work. It's just been really phenomenal and much needed. My question is, I'm wondering if the Joint Center involves itself in policy, because I'm often invited to think tank sessions on Social Security reform, tax reform, and PAYGO kinds of proposals, and that's not my expertise, and I'm always the only African-American woman there, mostly, and wondered if the think tank could engage itself in those kinds of considerations, because they certainly affect us largely.
Yes, indeed. I fully agree. And to a considerable extent, we do, and we do in several ways. One, we publish materials that have come out. We have a magazine that comes out every other month with policy analyses and policy data in it. We have some programs that emphasize areas like education. A big one for us now is healthcare, and we will be expanding our work in the whole area dealing with health disparities, which is a major issue affecting minorities, as you probably know. So we do. We also testify before Congress when invited to do so on pieces of legislation. And I gave out early, and hope you got it, our website, where you can just get lots of data on almost any public policy issue you would like.
Well, is there a particular point person that deals with Social Security reform that can be invited, that I can have invited to these events?
The answer to that is yes, and we have done some work on Social Security, and of course, you know, that's likely to be coming up again in 05 in a big way. And we are preparing to deal with it there as well. Mm-hmm. Check the website, www.jointcenter.org. If that doesn't give you what you want, then try our phone number, 202-789-3500, and we'll be happy to respond to you. If we do not have someone on board who can respond specifically to your issue area, we certainly can refer you to someone who can.
Julie, thanks for the call.
Thank you.
And we just have a few seconds left, but in a way, you're sorry you're not going to be around for that fight in 05 on Social Security reform?
I'll be around.
You'll be around?
I'll be around.
Not just going to be playing golf?
No, I'm not retiring to the golf course or the rocking chair. I've started a firm called Eddie Williams & Associates, and I will be getting involved in the Social Security area from other points of view.
Eddie Williams, thanks so much for being
with
us.
Thank you for having me.
32 years as president of the Joint Center. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News.